This is Jeannie Erickson, and I am an instructor at ILCT and another coaching school. And this call is about the client coachability concept. And it's a little bit controversial as a concept, and hopefully by the end of this hour, you'll find it not controversial and interesting. Hello, this is Jeannie Erickson. We're just starting our call. Who's this? Who just joined? Hello, welcome. This is Jeannie Erickson, and we're starting our call about client coachability. I'm going to ask everyone on the call a question, and I'll have the people in Canada answer first, and those on the East Coast second, West Coast and Midwest third, and anybody south of that or across the ocean last. So the question is, are you a new coach? And just answer new if you are, or how many years have you coached? Just the number. So who's in Canada on the call? And star 6 is unmute. Okay, anybody on the East Coast?
New.
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 4 years. 3 news. Okay.
4 years.
All right, 4 years. Anybody on the West Coast or Midwest?
2.
Okay. Anybody else?
New.
Okay. I'm in the Midwest. I'll say 8.
2.
Okay. And anybody south of the United States or overseas?
South Texas, I'm new.
Okay. Oh, you're a whole different place. Okay, new. All right. Anyone south of the United States or overseas? Okay. So thank you for helping me with that, because that helps me know what to tell you. So client coachability, when I was trained 18 years ago, we were all taught that every client is coachable and that if you just shifted your techniques, that would work. Unfortunately, most experienced coaches know that that's not always true. And my partner and I, her name is Manon Dalud. She's from in Canada, from the Vancouver area. She did her doctoral research, ended in 2012. Hello, welcome. We're talking about client coachability, and star 6 is mute and unmute. And Amy is going to put everyone in lecture mode, which she might have already done, and you can... Okay, now you're all muted, so you can star 6 to ask a question, and I'll pause every once in a while for questions. So Manon and I have been working on a theory based on research for the last 5 years, and that theory is about how we can assess the coachability of a client at the beginning of a case, and how we can coach them appropriately as they gain skills. And it turns out, after a lot of thought and practice and lots of other things, talking to other coaches, that we've come up with a plan to do that. And certain techniques in coaching match certain stages of client coachability. Isn't that cool? Of course, there's individual variation, but you can actually take some of the mystery out of coaching by knowing this system and being able to assess where a client is when you get them. So is anybody on the call an internal coach? Did Cindy join us? Star 6 to unmute. Internal coaches know, as do other coaches, that sometimes people are assigned to you for coaching, or you pick up a client who's interested in coaching who has some barriers to success. So our client coachability system helps you figure out who's who. And Manon and I think that there are 4 critical skills to be a good coach, not just a mediocre coach. And one is to know the difference between coaching and consulting, which you should all get by the end of your training. Hello, welcome. We're talking about client coachability. So another one is to know yourself and develop your coaching capacity on your own. Coaches come from different backgrounds, obviously, and some people are coming from therapy, some from management, some from finance, some from real estate, whatever, some from religion. Coaching capacity in your own training is a really important thing, and that's one of the reasons the ICF has continuing education, so we keep developing that. You know, we each have skills and strengths and humility and limitations and behavioral styles and all that, and sometimes we don't match with a client that someone else would be a good coach for. You know, it's a little naive to believe that we can coach everyone well. And does anybody disagree with that? Okay. So another skill is to know your client, and that's what this capacity training is about. And I'll be teaching a class on this starting in May. But I'm just going to talk to you today about kind of briefly what the model is. So capacity has to do with emotional, cognitive, physical, and social resilience. Manu and I did a lot of research about learning and change, and it pretty much comes down to how resilient are we when we're presented with a challenge. Resilient people can set goals, stabilize themselves, deal with challenges, and move ahead if they have the right skills and knowledge. People who aren't resilient can't do that. Is anybody on the call in the psychological field? Counselor, therapist, anybody like that? Okay. That's my background and Manu's background before coaching. And capacity builds in a circular process, kind of like our model conceives it as an upside-down snowman. For those of you who are from snow regions, you know that. The Texas person may not so much, may not know snow. So this circular process has to do with building resilience and skills. And theoretically, as you're coaching someone, they become more resilient, more strong, more skilled. In real life, stuff happens to people. And they can lose some of their resilience. You know, an example might be a person who's moving toward a goal of starting their own business, and they're in a car wreck. And suddenly they're unable to drive, they can't sit at their desk, you know, they have all kinds of medical bills, and that goal gets subverted somehow. You've probably seen that with friends and clients. Okay. So understanding your client is huge, and that's an area that we believe has been missing in coach training. The other skill is to make an ethical referral and to figure out when to make a referral. For those of you who've reviewed the Code of Ethics for the International Coach Federation, I used to be the chair of that committee and was on that committee for a number of years. The code tells us that we have to make a referral if another service would be better for a client. And when you take an ethics course in coaching, that they should teach you about that. But sometimes that kind of gets put to the side as coaches move into their career. They're desperate for clients, and so they're taking everybody who comes through the door or who calls or who contacts them online. And I don't know if you're familiar with websites and screening tools online, but I did some research into that. And lots of coaches have a readiness measure rather than a capacity measure to measure clients' willingness and ability to do coaching. And a readiness measure is something that says, you know, will you make appointments? Do you have the finances? Are you eager to do this? You know, it's a measure of attitude. Capacity is a much deeper measure, and it has to do with, are you emotionally resilient? Are you stable? Are you able to make goals? Can you focus? Do you have resources? Do you have enough ability, in other words? It's not just readiness, it's also ability. So questions so far? Star 6 to unmute, or thoughts? And I'm, you know, feel free to speak. I'm very open-minded, and I don't get offended easily. If you think what I've said so far is a crock, just tell me. Okay. Does anybody on the call, has anybody experienced a client who they really struggled with and who didn't make very good progress despite your best stuff? Any of the coaches who've been in the business a while? Okay. You know, the longer you coach, the more likely you are to have that experience. When Manon and I have talked to coaches who've coached more than 10 years, it's a universal experience that something wasn't there. You know, something went wrong. So the four types of resilience I mentioned, cognitive resilience is intellectual. It's managing your dialogue and your thoughts. And a lot of coaching techniques have to do with helping people manage their thoughts and think in a positive way, right? Emotional resilience has to do with managing your emotions and being able to regulate yourself regardless of the intensity of what's happening. In a lot of internal management required coaching, that's the issue. Somebody lost their temper and told somebody off, and they get sent to coaching, and they really want them to work on emotional regulation as a skill. Physical resilience has to do with accepting our health, improving our health, and focusing on our ability rather than disability. So at the moment, I have a torn knee ligament and meniscus from skiing last month, and I'm still in the gym every day, just highly modified, focusing on my abilities and not my disabilities. You know, that's a coaching attitude that some clients could not maintain if they ran into a big physical challenge. Social resilience has to do with the ability to develop a support system for yourself, to engage people, to maintain healthy relationships, and to resolve conflict. And social resilience is something that is necessary if you're going to achieve goals. I was listening to Mark Zuckerberg having to testify today, and somebody on NPR today was talking about the difference between the engineers who do all the designing online and the marketing people, and they don't ever talk to each other. You know, social resilience is something that even software engineers eventually have to deal with. They have to talk to somebody who doesn't understand software. Okay, so did everyone receive the model in your reminder call? If anyone didn't, please yell. Okay, so, hello, somebody not get one? Or are you just joining? Who just joined? All right, so it's star 6 to unmute if you'd like to unmute. We're talking about client coaching capacity. And
Jeannie, this is Amy.
Yeah.
I just realized I had everyone in lecture mode, which means they can't unmute themselves, so
you may have
had questions.
All right, well, there you go. Thank you, Amy.
So, what I'm going to do here is I'm just going to open up the lines so everyone will be unmuted unless they mute themselves. If I notice a noisy line, I will mute it, and then they can star 6. Okay?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
For all those who've been madly punching, thank you. All right, so let's go back to my pause there. Did anybody have thoughts or questions about those kinds of resilience, cognitive, emotional, physical, and social? And has anybody run into a client who didn't make progress despite your best efforts?
This is Steve. Yeah, I think that's really the case. And I like your model. It's interesting. I've signed up for a couple of these online sections where people supposedly go and put down coaching. And 9 times out of 10, when I actually take somebody on, they need therapy. They don't need coaching. And you can sort of see it in their remarks when you go through. So I think that your screening tool would be sort of interesting.
You know, there are three studies. Manon is one of those studies. She did her doctorate on coaching, and I was her doctoral supervisor. And her study and two other studies found that 25% of people who present for voluntary coaching are actually in high emotional distress. So 1 out of 4 clients may be actually a therapy referral. Isn't that kind of scary? And it's something that coaches aren't talking about very much, but it's out there. People would prefer coaching versus therapy if they can get it at this point, I think. And so we have to figure out who's who and how to deal with it in a tactful way if we make a referral. And we think that there is such a thing as resilience coaching, which is, if you look at the model, distress is at the bottom, which is, and we've intentionally done this with each layer getting bigger, so it's kind of wobbly. You know, it's off center because people move up and people move down the continuum, we believe, depending on their life events and their resilience. So if you start at the top, the performance level, let's talk about that first. The performance level of client is highly resilient. And let me read you some of the characteristics of people in this. I mean, they're the perfect coaching client. They're persistent. They're risk tolerant. They trust other people. They're self-confident. They see difficulties as challenges. They're adaptive and flexible. They are able to care for themselves well, their physical health and their emotional health. They can self-regulate their feelings under stress. They practice some kind of relaxation and recharging without getting addicted. They can use their resources. And what they like to work on in coaching, in our experience, is emotional intelligence, you know, making sure that they are highly tuned in and become more emotionally intelligent in their interaction. Negotiation skills for working out difficulties, leadership issues, team issues, global perspectives on things. You know, what's their purpose in their business? How are they going to move their life forward in a way that's high performance, whether it's running marathons or raising fabulous children or being a CEO? No, they don't have to be business people to be a performance client. And they sometimes want to work on energy renewal to prevent burnout because they go at a high rate of speed and hit the wall sometimes. And they also sometimes want to work on system dynamics and how one part of their life or business will affect the other parts and how recharging their energy will move them forward. Does that sound familiar to everybody? Hopefully we're all high-performance people. Anybody willing to say, I'm that client, if I were a coaching client? Oh, it's deathly quiet.
Hi, Sarah. I'm that client.
All right, there you go. I think I'm that client most days.
Yeah.
You know, I'm retirement age and I'm going strong and I love my work and my life and I'm active and happy, you know, and I have a purpose. You know, my purpose at this point is to really improve professionalism in coaching, which is a cool purpose. That's what I'm about right now, besides work with clients. So that would be the top level. And that would be our ideal client, probably. They're easy to work with. They make rapid change. You know, they're a fun client. A balanced coaching client is moderately resilient, and they have an emotional and personal foundation that's pretty good. They're self-aware. They can focus on things. They can envision something better. You know, they can set goals and see what a 10 would look like if they're at a 2 in their life. They're optimistic, usually, moderately confident, mostly positive about challenges. They have good skills in that they can take care of themselves to some degree. You know, they're functioning physically. They're good at prioritizing and following through, usually. They have some connections, some relationships. They are able to self-regulate their feelings and thoughts so they don't go off the rails. They usually can respond versus react to some kind of provocation. You know, they're not the kind of people that are getting arrested for domestic violence or something like that. You know, they're pretty rational people. And the things they may want to work on, they may want to work on being more self-sufficient, you know, not as dependent on others to keep them happy. They may want to work on having more play and enjoying life more, being happier. They may want to work on fitness. All of you who know the life wheel from your training, you probably recognize these things. They may want to work on how to recharge energy, how to advance their career, how to improve a relationship, how to improve their spiritual life, how to be more financially secure, and how to make their lifestyle congruent with their values. You know, frequently when I have a balanced client, they want to get aligned with their values. You know, I value children, and yet I'm working in software design or whatever. Or I want to be a teacher, but my education's in something else. Okay? So these are the people that we talk about balance in life, and we talk about improving their life satisfaction. And many clients who need balance coaching, if you have them rate themselves from 1 to 10 on a balance wheel, they'll have areas that are 6 or 7s and areas that are 2s or 3s. 2s or 3s would be low, 6 or 7s would be higher. They might have a few areas that are 9s. But they have some flats in their wheel. You know, they have some areas that are low. And so that would be a balanced client. Questions about that or comments so far on performance and balance clients? Does anybody recognize themselves as in this part of their resilience? If you're all in coach training or the new people, you're working on career change maybe. So that might put you in this range. I went through that about 20 years ago. Okay. So let's move on to the low resilience client. These are the more challenging clients. And these are people that probably can be coached but may take a slower approach, and they may need more coaching, longer coaching. So they have the desire to change. They're usually able to keep a job, and they don't have disabling mental illness or addiction. Those are the kind of the basics. You know, there is addiction coaching, but it's for people in recovery, not who are actively using. You know, it's hard to coach someone who's an opioid addict or a sexual addict or a alcoholic. They're in the low resilience or disability distress phase. So the skills of this low resilience client who would need resilience coaching, they can identify the gaps between where they are and where they want to be. They're willing to make change, even though it's scary. And they can focus their attention at least for periods of time. Some people specialize in ADD or ADHD coaching. A lot of their clients are low resilience clients. So the things they may want to work on, they may need to work on emotional reactivity. You know, they may overreact to triggers or overreact to situations and have trouble maintaining calm. That may be something they want to work on to be more resilient. they may need to improve their sleep habits and develop ways to rejuvenate their energy. They may want to master their thoughts so they're not worrying so much. Not disabling anxiety, but just worry. These people may be functional but worried. They may want to learn how to reframe challenges as opportunities and look for opportunities within difficulties. They may need to manage chronic pain or chronic illness, you know, heart disease, fibromyalgia, immune disorders. Those kind of people could be in resilience coaching sometimes. They may want to be more flexible and adaptable and have better self-care. These clients you might want to work on mindfulness practices with or relaxation techniques. You know, the high-performance client probably doesn't need that. Does that make sense? And if you try to do some of these things with a high-performance client, you're going to slow them down. But a resilience client really needs some of these techniques to, so that they become more adaptable and resilient. They may want to work on a healthy lifestyle. You know, if they're really overweight or have some kind of diabetes or some kind of problem that they really need to improve their lifestyle, they could improve their resilience that way. They may need to improve their self-confidence. They may have been in a relationship that beat them down. And they may need to improve their trust. And one of the critical skills for a low-resilience client is setting good boundaries. Well, that boundaries is kind of a therapy word, right? But personal boundaries really improve resilience, you know, figuring out whose problem is whose and whose problems you can solve, drains your resilience if you're not doing it well. So often resilience clients need to work on boundary setting. I had a resilience client who became a balance client, who became a performance client. She moved up the continuum, which is what we want. She started out, she was referred to me because she was just out of a bad divorce where the court awarded her ex-husband, who was kind of verbally abusive to her, joint custody. So she was court-ordered to talk to him for 10 minutes every Sunday night, which is kind of brutal. I have no idea why the judge thought that was a good idea. So she had to deal with this guy putting her down for 10 minutes a week. And he knew how to trigger her and all kinds of good stuff. He would tell her she was stupid and incompetent and things still after they were divorced. And so the first task we worked on was setting boundaries in those calls and not getting triggered and not reacting so she could improve her resilience. She eventually worked on getting a better job and improving her financial situation, which was a balanced task. And then she went on to get into management. She came back over time and got into management and really worked on performance. So that's an example of how someone can work up the levels. Okay, and then there's the distressed client. Let's talk about for a minute first about resilience clients. Has anybody had a client like this who really needed some basic regulation, self-regulation stuff before they could really reach their initial goals?
Absolutely.
Yeah. How long have you been coaching the one who said absolutely?
I haven't officially started, but doing with my volunteer clients, and definitely I have a couple of them.
Yeah. Does it help to understand what might be going on there? You know, that's it really clarifies where to start to figure some of this out. And it's not like we're trying to pigeonhole people because people are unique and special and have souls and all that. It's not a cookie cutter system or a cookbook. It's really about how do I understand who this human being is before I start coaching.
I've got a question for you.
Yeah, yes.
It seems like a lot of the performance level client and maybe the balance client, and or maybe more in business and business coaching perhaps, and the individuals in the low resilience, sometimes there needs to be a pain point for people who want to spend money for coaching. Do you find that to be the case, that a lot of the individuals that actually may be coming and actually willing to pay that are not looking towards the self-actualization, whatever, in level one and two, maybe more trying to relieve a pain? There's a specific issue they're trying to go?
Yeah, or they're going through a developmental change that they really didn't want. You know, they got a divorce, or they became a widow, or they were in a wreck, or they lost their job. And it threw them down the continuum into resilience issues, where before they were a balanced person, maybe. I have an example in her early 60s, managing about 40 engineers at a factory. Highly competent. She wanted performance coaching, and we were working on that. But about 3 months after we started coaching, the three critical people in her support system died. Her mother died, her husband died, and her dog died. She had no children. So she was thrown into resilience work, trying to get her feet back under her and work her way back into, how am I going to find a new lifestyle? Do I keep working? Because she was going to retire, and she wanted to work on high-performance retirement originally. And she ended up working several more years and came back to coaching when she was ready to retire and worked on the original goal. That's an example of something that may happen to you that can move you through the continuum. Does that make sense? I mean, stuff happens, right? So to answer your question, I think people do sometimes seek coaching when they're in pain, or at least very dissatisfied.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, find that. I mean, I do some retirement coaching and a lot of performance coaching. Mm-hmm. The balance is off, but the people that come in are distressed. It's more probably at the low resiliency, can't cope with it because it's totally new for them.
Right. So the distressed client is what I would call the typical therapy client. And the distressed client, they have significant gaps in resilience, and they don't have really the foundation that's needed to even do resilience coaching. And they're probably a referral to another professional. And, you know, the strengths they might have, they might be open to develop a support system, a medical system, a psychological support system, or, you know, a religious support system, whatever. They may have the ability to label their thoughts and feelings well, and they may be able to rate their satisfaction as poor. You know, this client, if you gave them a balance wheel and they were all twos and threes and fours, that's a red flag. That's a red flag that this client is in distress. So they would probably need to work on optimism and emotional control and having a personal routine. You know, sleep might be disrupted. They might have serious anxiety or depression. They might be bipolar. They might be addicted. You know, they are not a good coaching client from the sense of likely to be successful in coaching until they deal with some of these other issues. And they could be in therapy or addiction treatment at the same time as coaching, or they could do it first and then be coached. But there's some ways, and I could teach you that in the course, there's some ways to know whether concurrent or sequential coaching would be the right approach. So how do you decide, and there's some techniques that aren't rocket science, just interview techniques, to decide where people might fall on the continuum. And some of those, I'll just give you a few of them. You know, you could ask someone in interview, early in the interviews, you know, if you were to rate yourself on a scale from 1 to 5 or 1 to 10, how satisfied are you with your whole life right now? And then what's your strongest area and your weakest area? And can you explain your score? If you just listen to the answer to that, you can get a lot of information from a client versus, you know, the usual introductory call with a coach is, yeah, for 3 sessions you can do this, this, and this, and for 6 sessions, blah, blah, blah. And we listen to them, but we don't really listen for coachability. We're listening for goals, usually. And so what I'm suggesting and Manoa is suggesting is that we'll be better coaches if we also listen for their status, for their abilities. Another question would be, what practices do you use to soothe your feelings? You know, what do you do to soothe your feelings when you're upset? You know, if they say, well, I drink a half a pint of vodka, that's probably not a real good answer, right? It tells you something. Or they say, well, I have to take sleeping pills, or I cry a lot, or whatever. Those are red flags, okay? If you say, what physical conditions do you have that might impact your effectiveness? Do you have any physical conditions that might impact your effectiveness in reaching your goals? You know, maybe they'll say, I weigh 400 pounds, or maybe they'll say, I have terrible heart disease, or maybe they'll say something else. Okay. Somebody fall off and get back on, welcome. Okay? So there's a whole list of questions that can be taught, but those are examples of questions. Another one is, when you're stressed, how do you recharge your batteries? You know, there are healthier and not healthier answers to that, or more resilient and less resilient answers. You know, a resilient person will say, you know, I chill out for an evening, I go to a movie, I read a book, I do yoga. You know, they'll have some predictable way to recharge. And a low resilience person would say, I have no idea. I'm always so stressed and exhausted at the end of the day, I just can't function. Clients are usually honest in personal interviews if they're asking for coaching, and you introduce it with something simple like, you know, I'd like to get to know you a little bit before so I can decide whether you're a good match for coaching. Would you just answer some questions for me? So it's pretty easy to bring into an interview. I mean, you don't want to interview somebody for 45 minutes so they think they're grilled. That's not appropriate interaction for a coach. But asking a few casual questions really is appropriate. You can also use the wheel that I talked about. Has anybody not familiar with a balance wheel? Any of the new people not familiar with that yet? Star 6 to unmute. Okay, good. I'm glad you all know that one. You know, you can get a lot of information from those kind of wheels. It's a good, and I introduce it to all my clients, send it to them with the initial packet and say to them, you know, this will help us figure out what direction to go and where to focus in coaching, if you wouldn't mind filling this out. And then I listen while they explain their answers to me. You can get a lot of information from that. And then decide what kind of coaching to match with it. Thoughts about people you know or situations you've been in where you see yourself sliding up and down the continuum, or clients you've had that have changed?
This is Steve. I've had a couple of clients that were sort of low resilient and distressed. I had them at the same time seeing a therapist for the distress part, though often they told me that going to coaching was more relevant for them than being mental health, because they were more positive and got things. But yeah, it's interesting. Sometimes I've had one individual that was continued to live sort of an abusive relationship, knew what she needed to do, but didn't want to do it. She finally left because she didn't want to be confronted with having to come and tell me that she was doing something that she didn't want to do. It was interesting. But yeah, I think sometimes the dual thing is helpful as far as seeing a therapist and a coach at the same time. Mm-hmm. You tend to work on different things. At least she wanted me to work on different things. And she was dealing with PTSD, reactive attachment disorder, and other stuff with her therapist. And I was dealing actually the future where we were going.
Yeah,
worked out well, but eventually attachments and stuff didn't get solved.
Yeah, I mean, one of the differences between coaching and therapy is obviously the coaching focuses on now and the future, and therapy talks about the past and whys of things. In coaching, we don't worry about much about why. We worry more about how and when and who and what. But one of the tenets of the ICF philosophy is that we coach the who of the client and not just do cookie-cutter coaching with different people. Where we, you know, I've seen coaches advertise, you know, 6 sessions. I do this the first session, this the second session, this the third session, this the fourth session. Well, I think it's a good marketing tactic, but it really doesn't deal with the who of the client, which is a concern ethically as coaches. You know, are we professionals or are we technicians? And knowing about the who of the client really moves you at a higher level of professionalism and skill. And in this coachability class, we talk about these are the kind of coaching strategies that you would want to use with this kind of client. And there's quite a bit of, there's a lot of information about different strategies. So it sort of catalogs them by these will work with this client and these will likely work with this client. For example, brief solution-focused coaching, which is a great model by Imzu Kimberg and Peter Szabo. It's a 6-session model of coaching, or that which is typical of most coaching clients. And that really doesn't work with resilience coaching. It works well with balance coaching, and it may work well with performance coaching, but it's most likely seen as useful by the balance client. You know, teaching meditation may, or encouraging meditation, may be very useful for a low resilient client for resilience coaching, but not for a performance client. So it's clumsy of us to assume that just because we think a technique is really cool and we like it, that we should use it with all clients. Does that make sense, or does that sound controversial? Do you think I'm shortchanging clients here?
That sounds like something I'd like to know more about.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Tell me more about your question.
I'm familiar with Szabo's reef coaching, and I didn't hear before, or I haven't discovered anywhere where it talks about, especially according to the model that you presented, about performance level balance, and also there's a big effort at work as well to promote mindfulness, for example, and I didn't realize that there's no different approaches for those different levels.
Isn't that interesting?
It is.
It's what will move them forward quickly and really will support their developmental growth. And what we're trying to do is be sensitive to sequential growth, and you need a certain level of foundation to build on, just like with any kind of development. You know, it's hard to walk without crawling. You can do it, but it's hard, you know. It's hard to speak without babbling. You know, it's hard to graduate from college if you never got to sleep in your own bedroom, you know. So there are, the same thing occurs in adult development. You know, people go through developmental phases because they have life events and because they're aging. And how we approach those things, depending on our skills, some techniques really will move you forward more effectively. And it takes a while for a coach to figure that out. I mean, we didn't figure it out till 15 years into the profession and after research and after lots of trainings and conferences, you know.
So talking about Szabo and their technique, you know, that is a particular kind of technique where you have clients scale their change each time, and there's some other techniques. So, you know, compared to last time, how do you feel you've done on this? If you use that with a low resilience client, they might get discouraged because they're not making change that quickly. If you use that with a balance or performance client, they might really be encouraged by that and grab onto it. That's just one example of how it might fit or not fit with a client. Okay?
That's comment. Intriguing to me. I would like to know more about that. Do you have that in a book somewhere? Or
we're writing a book. We just sent it off this morning, first chapter, to a publisher, to Dangle. But the class starts May the 3rd about this.
It's
Client Coachability is the name of the class.
Okay.
And it used to be called Maximize Success, so some places they still have the wrong name on the ICLCT website.
Okay.
Okay.
But it's called Client Coachability now. It's going to be on Thursday evenings. And it starts May the 3rd. So it's a long discussion, and we spend 8 hours talking about it in the class. And at the end of it, you really come out prepared better to understand it and to apply it, which I think is, you know, all good lessons have to do with, can I use this? The last time I taught it, somebody said it was the most dense class they'd ever taken in terms of material and tying things together, which is what we've tried to do. I was used to be a college teacher, and I love to teach, and it's about how do you connect things in our heads so that we develop our own capacity as coaches. Does that make sense? You know, that we can become better if somebody helps us tie things together. So that's what this class intends to do, is tie things together. Okay?
That sounds very interesting to me. I'd like to follow up on that.
Well, good for you. You know, it's a new theory. It's totally original. And we've talked to some of the people. Magda is a friend, because I used to be on the ethics committee, and Manon is an assessor, and we've helped design conferences with the people at the office, and she's very interested in this. The heads of some coaching schools are interested in it. It's kind of, we think, where the profession may be going is customizing coaching to the client versus just training people to do some techniques. And I'm not putting that down. I mean, coach training is good. But without this component, how do you know what to do? With who? Does that make sense?
It does. That's why it's so interesting to me, because I can see the different avenues now. I haven't recognized those before until you showed your diagram, and then also the discussion and seeing the different efforts that are being made throughout, saying, oh, had they known this, they probably wouldn't have taken that approach.
Yeah, I'm sure I made lots of mistakes in my early years. And what we're trying to do is take the mystery out of it. You know, it's not rocket science. There is an approach you can take that works with most people if you can figure out where they fit and what is their capacity for change. The capacity is, I can't emphasize enough, is different than willingness and readiness. Readiness is a Prohaska and somebody else take, you know, that most people have been trained in. You know, there's pre-contemplation, contemplation, blah, blah, blah. That is different than capacity, because you might be very ready but not capable. And people don't recognize their own capacity limits because they don't understand coaching when they enter it unless they've been trained as a coach. And I'm a humanist. I want people to reach their maximum potential all the time. And if I can help them do that as a coach, I want to do the best job I can do. I want it to be efficient and targeted and appropriate and not overwhelming and not discouraging to them, which coaching can be if it's not customized. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Any other thoughts or questions or disagreements?
Am I on? Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Yep. This is Dave. My work is actually with couples. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just curious about, you know, special implications for that. Obviously, mm-hmm. you have two people that you have to be looking at, but then there's the mm-hmm. dynamic of what goes on between them as well. Just curious for any special comments you would have for that, or any resources to that degree.
Right. I do couples work as well. It's difficult when, I'll comment, it's difficult when one person is a balanced person and the other one is a resilience person.
Right.
Or one's a performance and one's a balance. And it's negotiating neutral territory between them where they can find goals that they can both meet. Does that make sense?
It does.
You know, and that's a little tricky. You have to know more about the system and how to figure it out and what kind of coaching works with each level, which is too hard to explain right now. But it is possible to find that sweet spot if you know how to look for it. And and you can't coach up to one or down to one. You have to find a middle ground. Or one gets bored and one's frustrated.
Right. Okay.
Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. The I think my style has been to let the person who is at the lowest level, if you want to call it that, in a sense kind of control speed and pace, because if they're not able or not ready to go beyond that, you can't drag them. You know, this is a relation.
Right. Yeah, so. You can't push them or drag them. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. But and maybe some of it is giving the person who's at the higher level insight about what strengths the other person has and how to build those strengths, and giving them both insight about weaknesses and strengths in both parties.
Yeah.
So that they don't feel that it's resistance. They understand its capacity.
Right. Yeah, very good.
I hate that term, the resistant client. It's just that we don't understand their capacity. You know?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I don't think people resist unless they're hogtied and they're going to get fired unless they do it. Then sometimes they resist. But I think usually it's a capacity problem.
Yeah, I agree. All right, I appreciate that.
Yeah. Any other final comments or questions? All right. Well, it's been a pleasure, and I will look forward, hopefully, to meeting some of you in class. That starts May the 3rd, and we're probably a year out from a book about this, if we can get somebody hooked to publish it. So we're going to Norton. So thank you all for your attention. Okay.
Thank you. Wonderful.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye.